Chapter 1. The Union Incarnate, for Better and Worse. The United States Congress. In the middle of December 1833, the 33-year-old French set off for the nation's capital and a new life as a clerk for the U.S. House of Representatives. Duty drove him more than anything else. As he explained in his diary, he needed to earn money to pay his debts. He was too extravagant with his earnings, he knew, and now he was paying the price. His wife, quote, all I love on this earth, was back in New Hampshire, and he was trundling in a stagecoach, then three steamboats, then another stagecoach to Washington. During his trip, French bumped up against concrete evidence of just how localized the nation and he himself were. State banks printed their own currency, so interstate travel required preparation, and French wasn't prepared. In Pennsylvania, he discovered that his New Hampshire bills weren't much good. When his wife followed him to Washington a few months later, he had sage advice, quote, use New Hampshire or Massachusetts money until you get to New Haven, and then begin upon your Southern money. I had some trouble in Philadelphia to get rid of my New Hampshire money. Southern money in hand, French arrived in Washington on December 21st, 1833, at 1:30 a.m. on a cold morning, to be precise, and he spent the day doing what any visitor would do. He toured the Capitol with fresh eyes. What he saw was a raw young city with pretensions of becoming something more. Planned in the 1790s and first serving as the seat of government in 1800, Washington was a new capital for a new nation. Boosters called it the City of Magnificent Distances. Critics called it the City of Magnificent Intentions. Either way, it embodied big hopes and an uncertain future. You could see the city's rawness everywhere, in its sprawling dimensions and empty expanses, in its clusters of low wood houses and straggling rows of buildings pocked by vacant lots, in the odd, isolated splendor of its scattered handful of large government buildings, quote, as if the British Museum suddenly migrated to the center of an exhausted brick field, in its broad, unpaved avenues and its seemingly permanent blanket of dust from ongoing construction. As late as 1850, houses weren't numbered, street signs weren't mandatory, there were no streetlights, quote, and the visitor who wanted to find a residence had to depend upon the hack drivers whose method of memory seemed to be that each person lived just a little way from somewhere else. Thanks to poor planning, sewage pooled in low-lying areas. There was a miasmatic swamp near the White House, and in 1857, a sewage-induced dysentery outbreak in the National Hotel killed three and sickened dozens, including the president-elect. Cows, geese, and pigs roamed the streets. Over the years, French had countless livestock run-ins. On one evening in 1838, he was convinced that, quote, nearly all the dogs in Washington were behind his boarding house barking at cows. A few years later, a cow wearing a bell woke him night after night for months. Even as he was complaining in his diary, the cow seemed to jingle her bell, quote, as if she knew that I was writing about her. Damn that cow. In a city networked by more roads and alleys than New York or Philadelphia, the streets themselves seemed to rise up in rebellion. Crossing one of the broad avenues could be an adventure. When it rained, they were mired in mud. When it didn't, the wind stirred up dust clouds so dense that people were choked and blinded. The wise Washingtonian carried a handkerchief to cover nose and mouth when crossing the street. Quote, you have no idea of the dust, noted a clerk searching for a place to board that wasn't enveloped in a thick cloud of it. In the summer of 1856, Congress spent nearly $2,000 watering down Pennsylvania Avenue, roughly equivalent to $56,000 in 2017. French, commissioner of public buildings at the time, supervised the watering. Of course, Washington changed during its first five decades, transforming from a town of roughly 8,000 people in 1800 to a city of more than 50,000 in the 1850s. But one thing didn't change. Washington revolved around the openings and closings of Congress. Just before the start of every session, a migrant group of politicians and their families trooped to the Capitol, joined by a throng of hangers-on, quote, distinguished foreigners, gentlemen who were traveling for amusement, political demagogues, claimants, patentees, letter writers, Army and Navy officers, office hunters, and a host of gamblers and blacklegs, not to mention socialites eager for fun. One congressman included, quote, lunatic.